Welcome to Movements, a broadcast where we look at stories in the news and connect them to Canada's colonial history, its democracy serving a diverse population, and its foreign affairs with a global north and global south analysis. It's a broadcast that talks about power, biases, and how all of us in the Eastern Townships can care about what's going on near and far. I'm Gabrielle, and let's dive right into what's been happening. Quick note, at the end of this broadcast, we cover a protest against sexual violence. It can be a sensitive subject. First, today we'd like to update you on a local event related to the COP15 conference that was covered in this broadcast 2 weeks ago. If you aren't familiar with the Conference of Parties, or the COP, COP15 conference, it's a United Nations conference on biodiversity that will be taking place in Montreal very soon, starting on December 7th. One of the few agreements that countries had leaving the last round of negotiations that prepared for this conference is the importance of maintaining and growing green and blue spaces in urban settings, protecting forests, parks, marshes, etc., that are in our cities. We mentioned the Beckett Forest a few weeks ago, and today I thought to highlight that an association to protect the Boisé Asco Lennox has purchased their first piece of land, a 9,000 square foot lot. This is part of their larger goal to conserve this forest in the heart of the city in perpetuity. The value that it provides to Lennoxville and to the Sherbrooke community. The Boisé Asco Lennox is massive in size, larger than the Parc du Mont Bellevue. If you pull up a map, you'll see just how wide it spreads behind Lennoxville, serving as a site for hiking and mountain biking, especially in the summer months. The plot of land was bought through a crowdfunding campaign that had originally been created to buy back the land where their former Hell's Angels bunker in Lennoxville was located, wanting it to be returned to the community affected by their presence the most. Since that property ended up being purchased, the funds raised have now gone to another community interest, the Asco Lennox Forest. Next up, a news story that parents in the Estuary region and across Canada likely already are familiar with, the shortage of children's pain and fever medication in pharmacies. Parents looking for common medications like liquid Tylenol and Advil for their children to help give their kids something to relieve their symptoms only find empty shelves. Some parents even cross the U.S. border to get these over-the-counter medicines that are no longer available. This problem has made its way up to the federal government.
Why didn't they do anything for 7 months? We just found out yesterday from the Deputy Minister of Health that the government knew in April that there was a shortage of children's pain medication. And as a result of the government doing nothing, we have parents that have to drive to the States. Sometimes they have to meet in dark parking lots to buy a bottle of aspirin or Tylenol for $200.
And their children. That's Pierre Poilievre, leader of the Federal Conservative Party of Canada. He's pointing out that the children's medicine shortage began this summer as kids began returning to their normal routines, leading to a rise in flu and respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, that normally wouldn't happen until the fall and winter months. The shortage began then, it's just being exacerbated now as COVID enters the picture. Poilievre seems to amplify these frustrations that are happening at local pharmacies in a rather populist manner to reveal his larger critiques of the Liberal government, of the impacts of inflation. The inability for families to get these children's medicines has led to some harsh criticism from members of Parliament directed towards Health Canada. Conservative MP Stephen Ellis said, "I would suggest we should have anticipated that there might be a surge in the fall of the year and taken it much more seriously in April. I think that's shameful," end quote. What's being done to solve this immense drug shortage?
Mr. Speaker, as a minister, but also as a mother, I am very aware of the stress and anxiety of parents across Canada and of Canadian children. That's why I was glad that my colleague, the Minister of Health, on Monday announced that Health Canada has secured foreign supply of children's medication, which will be available for sale in the coming weeks.
That's Chrystia Freeland, the Deputy Prime Minister. The shipment ordered by Health Canada, which includes liquid Tylenol and chewable acetaminophen tablets, is being imported because domestic production is not able to meet demand. Johnson & Johnson, who produces children's Tylenol at a plant in Guelph, has said it has already boosted production. Previously, one of the reasons why importing medicine from the US or Australia was tricky was because of Health Canada's requirements that medicine be packaged in both English and French so that people would know and understand what they were giving themselves or their kids. Health Canada recently waived these rules to allow medicine to be imported and distributed to hospitals. The incoming shipment, Chrystia Freeland describes, will have both languages on the packaging, and Federal Minister of Health Jean-Yves Duclos said the shipment contains several months' worth of demand. What we do know now is that the medicine shortage goes far beyond just children's medications, but hundreds that are running low in Canadian pharmacies, including adult cough and cold medicines, among many others. This is just to say that the disarray that empty shelves in a drugstore can cause in people's lives says something about burnout, exhaustion, and frustration that's running through a post-pandemic society that has risen up to the federal government, who some thought should have prevented this in the first place. It would be hard-pressed not to reconsider the phrase post-pandemic when Quebec has recommended but not mandated mask wearing again in public settings, as the rise of flu, SRV, and COVID-19 puts further pressure on the healthcare system. Here's Quebec's Minister of Health and Social Services, Christian Dubé, to explain.
First, we say to wear a mask in busy public places for everyone, regardless of ages. I think that's important, but we made an exception, exclude schools and daycares.
Once again, these are just recommendations at this point.
Everybody hurts sometimes. Sometimes everything is wrong.
Finally, we're taking a look at a protest that took place last Thursday on November 10th in Lennoxville, Take Back the Night. Instead of me explaining it, I've brought in someone who can do it much better.
Hi, my name is Amy Godward. My pronouns are she, her, or they, them. I'm studying in psychology at Bishop's University, but I'm taking a bit of time out right now to focus on some work that I'm doing. Take Back the Night is an international event that happens annually. I believe it was started in the 60s, actually, so it's been going around for a long time. And it's basically a chance for survivors and people who support survivors to be really loud and take back the spaces in their community that have been taken away from them by violence.
Here she's talking about sexual violence and gender-based violence. For an idea about what Amy called being loud, here are a few short audio clips of some of the chants during the protest.
No more silence! No more violence! No more silence!
1, 2, 3, 4!
We won't take it anymore!
5, 6, 7, 8!
No more violence! No more hate!
At Bishop's University, it was first started by Annika Malone, who was a recent graduate. She started it, I think, 5 years ago, and it's just grown every single year. So just a really empowering event. We get to walk through the streets of Lennoxville and shout and scream, and people make posters and banners. And it's really just, it's so nice to walk alongside people who support you, and you know that everyone's there for the same cause. And yeah.
Amy is one of the senior co-chairs at Bishop's student-led sexual culture committee, the committee that organizes these Take Back the Night protests. Here she explains how it started.
So Take Back the Night was like the event that kind of started everything. It was just Annika Malone on her own kind of doing that, with along with the help of a former counselor, Geordie Hepburn, who has since left, unfortunately, but they started it together. The event itself. And in the third year of the event at Bishop's, there was a forum. Annika at Scotia Sharp, who's another one of the co-founders of the Sexual Culture Committee, they hosted a forum to ask students for their input. They wanted to get backing from students and have direct quotes from students and direct ideas. And that's where I really got involved. And at the end of the forum, you know, I approached Annika and Scotia, thanked them for the event, and said, what else can we do? Like, I feel like we need to do something else. You know, this needs to be an ongoing thing. It's great to have forums like this, but there needs to be continuous work going on here. And that's basically how the Sexual Culture Committee was born. Just like one conversation at the forum.
In this broadcast, we connect stories in the news to Canada's colonial past, but it's more accurate to say that colonialism continues to affect people's day-to-day lives today, and that the processes of colonialism are often ongoing. Here, I ask Amy about a poster that was used in this year's Take Back the Night protest.
One of the main posters that was used to publicize Take Back the Night this year was a poster of someone with a red handprint over the bottom of their face. For those who aren't familiar with this red handprint, can you share what it symbolizes and why it's important to highlight when we talk about sexual violence?
From the beginning, from our inception as a committee, it's been really important to us that we have a connection with the Indigenous people on our campus, particularly the women and the people in the 2S LGBTQIA plus community. Because when we're talking about sexual violence and gender-based violence, we can't talk about it without addressing the rates of violence against Indigenous women, girls, and 2S LGBTQIA plus people. Because Indigenous women are 12 times more likely to be murdered than people who are non-Indigenous. 63% of Indigenous women have experienced physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. 26% of Indigenous women experience violence during childhood. And I think what's really important to mention as well is that 70% of these crimes are committed by non-Indigenous people. And this is a direct repercussion of colonialism, or should I say it's evidence of colonialism happening right now. It's shocking, you know, those statistics may shock people, and I think that it's right that people should be shocked, because this isn't like a history. This is ongoing. This is now. This is our time now. And I think everybody across Canada has a responsibility to be looking at what is happening right in front of us and addressing it, whether that's in a personal way, like looking at their own biases and prejudice and unlearning some of the things that maybe they've been taught or maybe that they've seen, but also in pushing politicians, writing to your MP, getting out there marching whenever there's like a protest or a Remembrance Day, donating to Indigenous businesses and charities, lifting up those voices, giving that space to Indigenous people when they need it, and when you're in a position yourself to be able to give that space. Yes. From the beginning, we knew that we wanted to collaborate with the Indigenous people on campus. This is a very real and incredibly raw, emotional topic for a lot of people. And so I think there's like a really delicate balance between asking for those stories and asking for those people to speak, but also us doing the work on decolonization ourselves as non-Indigenous people, and making sure that we're not asking Indigenous people all the time, what can we do to help? How can we help? When you can go online and you can read like the call to action, and you can see solid steps that you can take as a non-Indigenous person. So we're very wary of that, but I think we're really so honored to have like a close relationship with Vicky Baldo.
Vicky Baldo is the Special Advisor Indigenous Student Support at Bishop's University.
And Camilla, who is the SRC president.
The SRC is the student government.
They've always been really big advocates of the work that we do, and we're so grateful to have their like presence and support. But we know that there's more that we can do as well.
Lastly, Amy was kind to share another local initiative surrounding gender-based violence.
And the last question I have is that you are also involved at the Lenoxville District's Women's Center. So wondering if you could just share a little about the 12 Days of Action to End Gender-Based Violence.
Yeah. So, I'm really fortunate to have found work at the Lenoxville and District Women's Center, and they're an organization that supports English-speaking women and their families in the Eastern Townships. So we do like advocacy and we do activities and events and stuff like that. It's really a really beautiful place. Things that we do every year is we have a series in the record for the 12 Days of Action to End Gender-Based Violence. People submit personal stories. They submit educational articles. We have artwork, poetry, all different kinds of things. And we give these people a platform in the record. It's really awesome to hear voices from so many different people, such a wide range of people in our community, especially, you know, in Lenoxville, where the school is like a big part of it, but there are so many voices of the local people here, the people who've lived here for a very long time, who've had their own personal histories with violence. And I just think it's a really great way to combine all those voices and have them publicly shared so that their stories become part of everyone's conversations.
Once again, a huge thank you to Amy Godward for being on this week's broadcast, for being such a refreshing and informative voice. You've been listening to Movements, a broadcast where we connect stories in the news to colonialism, a democracy serving a diverse population, and foreign affairs with a focus on global North and global South relations. Some weeks we cover all topics, others just one or two. The song used in today's broadcast is Everybody Hurts by Rem. Let yourself go.